I hereby call this meeting of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees to order. The first order of business is approval of a proposed agenda. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Support.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The agenda is approved. The next order of business is approval of the minutes from December 13, 2019. Could I have a motion to approve the December meeting minutes?
So moved.
Support.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? The minutes are approved. We will now move to public participation.
We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Any responses from board members will come during trustee comment portion of the meeting. First, we will hear from Gregory Spencer, followed by Elizabeth Abdener.
I would encourage you to get your cell phones out. My time has already started. Hello and good morning. And trustee Tabai, our new trustee, you need to get your email fixed because you didn't respond to my emails. I'd like to get your attention, so I'm going to tell you 3 quick jokes. The first one is, I really admire everyone who's here. You got your cell phones out? Come on, people, I asked that. Cell phones out, because I'm going to ask you to Google 3 words, sharpshooter basketball patents. Then you understand where I'm coming from. Here's the first one. I admire that you're all here, and you guys had to be here, so forget you. It's a cold day in hell when this gets resolved. And it is cold outside. Oh, hi, President. How you doing? Don't look at me like that. You'll scare me. All right? If you're trying to scare me, you did. Second joke. That was the first joke. Second joke is I want to commend and recognize a couple of people. Trustee Ferguson, who's not here, I see. Trustee Byram, who's not here, and Mr. Quinn. One acts but doesn't listen. One listens but doesn't act. And one does neither. Second joke, all right, let's see. You got your cell phones out, sharpshooter basketball? Don't be embarrassed, it's not a crime. I came today with 3 things in mind, and I only got a short amount, time's out. First one to tell you, I discovered the way to reduce a 9-inch error in targeting. Michigan State University men's and women's basketball game has been using this, exclusively to my knowledge. They're not telling other people about it. Why? Because it works so well. It only works for bank shots. Second thing I want to say is I want to congratulate the Board of Trustees for getting together on an emergency meeting for an athletic department problem and come up with $30 million to take care of it. It gives me hope. Okay? You need to fix this problem. You have been using my property without permission. Mr. Quinn, you know that, and you've chosen to respond by ignoring me, intimidating me, and threatening me. I'm sick of you. By the way, I think in about 40 seconds my time is up and I don't get to talk to you again. But I hope I've been direct with you. President Stanley, I've sent messages to your person, Meredith. She must not be a good communicator to you because you should have been talking to me. You could have resolved this just by saying, let's work together. I come to you as a person who believes in free speech, redressing of grievances, and a third one, my patent gives me the right to negotiate an offer for sale. Since we haven't reached a sale negotiation, one of the things that's going to happen is the rest of the country, the Spartan Nation, is going to be shocked when they find out about this. They're going to say, you guys have an unfair advantage. I believe banners will come down. That's what I wanted to tell you. By the way, if we resolve it, hey, it's resolved. If you work with me, I'll work with you. If not, you're thieves, every one of you. Hi, Joel, how you doing?
Next, we will hear from Elizabeth Abdener, followed by Margarito Garcia.
Good morning. My name is Liz Abdener. I'm an MSU alum and an attorney. I represent Dr. Christy Poitra, who is also an alum as well as an MSU employee. She's standing here to my left. I'm here to speak to you today about Agenda Item 8 and a name that is absent from that list. That name is Dr. John Norder, a faculty member in the College of Social Science. Over several years, Dr. Norder, who was Dr. Poitras' direct supervisor, repeatedly told Dr. Poitras about his sexual fetishes, including bondage, anonymous sex, voyeurism, and sex with his wife. Dr. Norder liked talking about his feces and his anus and sent Dr. Poitras a photo from the shower. At work, Dr. Norder asked Dr. Poitras how she lost her virginity. Recently, Dr. Poitras was forced to get a personal protection order against Dr. Norder for stalking. I could go on, but I only have 3 minutes. On August 19th of 2018, I'll repeat that, 2018, Dr. Poitras confided in a colleague about these issues. That colleague then reported her concerns to the MSU Title IX office, or OIE. Over the course of the investigation, MSU Information Security examined Dr. Norder's work desktop computer. In January 2019, over 1 year ago, they produced a report outlining their findings. I will read from that report for you. The examination of the subject's desktop computer produced the following findings. Recovery of over 1,000 sexually explicit video and image files, some of which included the subject himself. Evidence of file deletion, including sexually explicit images, and web browser bookmarks for at least 6 sexually explicit or hookup websites. Dr. Poitras' case has now been open for 544 days. And where has Dr. Norder been during this time? He is teaching 2 undergraduate anthropology classes this semester every Tuesday and Thursday in the Natural Sciences Building with full, unfettered access to students. Dr. Poitras is here because she believes in MSU. She asked the MSU Board of Trustees to use their authority to fix the MSU Title IX process and make sure that people like Dr. Norder do not remain on campus. Thank you all for your attention.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Margarito Garcia, followed by Michael Shapiro.
Thank you for your time. And I hope that I can bring more awareness to the issue of the importance of Chicanos and people of Mexican descent in Michigan through the fact that I left for the president a copy of the resolution by the governor, and it basically is underscoring again of the importance of looking at one aspect of Chicano history, which is Chicano history in Michigan as compared to other states. Michigan was the first state in the nation to declare a Chicano History Week recognition. And then now we have about half a dozen other states in the nation. Now get this, Michigan was not one of the states that became a state because of the ending of the war between the U.S. and Mexico, but yet because of the fact that the Chicano movement impacted here significantly in the 60s, they went to the governor and asked for a Chicano History Week recognition, and that's part of history. Making history is history as well as other things. But it couldn't have come at a more important time because I also included an article that talked about the Chelsea situation with the people there thinking that people had to go back to Mexico because they looked brown or had a Spanish name and things like that. We are experiencing all over Michigan these events. And you are welcome to please share with anybody the article written by me called Chicano History Week, which when I was doing research for this article, I had not known about the history with MSU and Chicano History Week. So I thought it was worthwhile making it known. In spite of that, I didn't see as much enthusiasm on the part of the Chicano Latino Studies program on this one issue, okay? And I'm not sure that it's the highest priority in their agenda, but isn't it a nice thing to have a feather in your cap that you can say is your own? Isn't it? And then to have a Chicano Latino Studies program that almost ignored the situation. Twice I've brought to them this declaration from the governor when she first came on, and now this year, and she's so nice to be so open to looking at this issue in a positive way. I wish I could just see the Chicano Latino Studies be as enthusiastic. Now, I know that you know that I have tried to tell you guys that we need to improve the Chicano Latino Studies program. We need more people of Mexican descent. We need more people who are U.S. citizens. We need more people who have Spanish-speaking ability. And we need more people who have a direct knowledge through living in the neighborhoods that they say they came from. We don't have enough such representation in those that are in the students or the faculty. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Michael Shapiro, followed by Steffi Kang.
Hello. My name is Michael Shapiro. I'm professor at the Department of Mathematics, MSU. And I would like to address issue 9B2 for dismissal, of course, of one of our colleagues. I would like to express the sentiments of a group of faculty in the mathematics department that dismissal, of course, for Professor Akbulut is an unfair discipline disproportionate to Professor Akbulut's actions. And Professor Akbulut has worked at the mathematics department at MSU for nearly 40 years. He's a world-famous mathematician known for his significant contribution in topology. And I personally think that such discipline will damage the morale within the math department and will harm the reputation of Department of Mathematics and MSU as a whole for many years. So I request the Board of Trustees to reconsider this case carefully. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Steffi Kang, followed by Shiska Sneha.
Good morning. My name is Steffi Minjun Kang. I'm an international PhD student and the chair of the International TA Committee at Graduate Employers Union, or GEU. I'm here today representing international student workers to voice on the issue of international student fees. Each semester, all international students are charged for student fees, which amounts $750 for undergraduate students and $75 for graduate students. This fee isn't charged for domestic students, meaning this is an extra fee that international students pay. Together, this student fee generates about $5 million annually. In 2017, GEU contacted several university offices and met with the head of the Planning and Budget Office, David Bailey, asking how this extra student fee is budgeted and used for international students. We learned that only about $350,000 out of $5 million is used for programs and services for international students. That's about 8% of the entire fee. Then the other 92% of the fee goes into general funding, which was impossible to trace. If the fee is charged for international students only, why isn't at least the majority of the fee used for unique services that international students need? What are we paying 92% of this fee for? For example, the English Learning Center, which is one of the core resources for international students, recently couldn't afford buying noise-canceling headphones for a speaking test. During this test, several students speak at the same time to a computer in the same room, and without the noise-canceling headphones, students are distracted, and which affect their performance. The budget for 25 noise-canceling headphones was only $5,000, which is not even a meaningful amount in the $5 million pool. ELC eventually found funding for affording these headphones last week, which we appreciate and was glad to hear, but I still wonder, why isn't this $5 million used for places like English Learning Center? They shouldn't suffer from budget issue considering this gigantic amount of student fees. This is transparency issue. Right now on students' building account, the fee is marked as student fee, not as international student fee. Students often think this is not for international students specifically because of this name. So we ask you to clearly state it as international student fee on the bill statement. We also urge you to clarify how the other 92% of this international student fee are budgeted. If you can't justify how they are used for international students, I urge you to waive this fee. President Stanley, in your message to international students on January 30th, you said, quote, "Since Michigan State University admitted our first international student in 1873, we've welcomed tens of thousands of international students and scholars from all over the world. The perspectives and talents and contributions of these international Spartans have been integral to MSU's success and will continue to be an important part of our future, unquote. If we are a crucial member of MSU, we want to see this message in the budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Shiksha Sneha, followed by Jonathan Suan.
S- So exactly 2 weeks ago, I was dealing with an immigration issue. I'm still dealing with it because it doesn't go away that fast. And I decided to go to OISS to talk to an advisor. After waiting for about 20 to 30 minutes, I finally got to sit down and talk to an advisor. And that was probably one of the worst experiences I've ever had in my life. I was there afraid and confused, but not only was I made to feel incompetent, but I was made to feel like I didn't belong here at Michigan State or in this country. And literally every time I think about that moment or talk about that moment, that feeling of not belonging here returns. And this is not an isolated incident. I've talked to certain employees there. I've talked to other international students who go to that office, who go there with questions and confusion and return with feelings of isolation. So next, I decided to go to undocumented.msu.edu, the new website, to look for resources I could use. And I decided to call MSU's Law Immigration Clinic, which was a resource listed on there, only to find out that it's closed for this whole semester and will remain closed, so I couldn't use it. And so the only thing I've been thinking about is how I don't want to leave. My family, my friends, my future, they're all here. Like, everything I've ever hoped for or wanted is in this country. And now me, an immigrant with legal documentation, is feeling this way. Imagine how students who are on DACA or undocumented are feeling. Disclosing your immigration status takes a lot of trust and courage. And when that someone treats you like that, you're left not wanting to ask for help again. Now, Michigan State can't really do anything about what's happening at a national level, but we can ensure that these students feel safe and like they belong here. We can make sure that the people interacting with these students have proper training and knowledge. We can make sure that there's a designated person that these students can go to talk to. That when the university does provide resources, they actually exist and they actually work. That website was a great first step, but there's a lot more we can do. I want the university to make us feel like we belong here. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Jonathan Suon, followed by Alexa Marsh.
Hello. The undergraduate students of Michigan State University's Asian Pacific American Student Organization affirms the belonging of all Asian and Asian Pacific Islander, Desi American, as well as Asian international students, scholars, faculty, and staff on this campus. There continues to be a rapid spread of information, real and false, regarding the coronavirus, COVID-19. Misinformation, such as the death toll and suggestion that the virus was lab-engineered, causes unnecessary panic and anxiety in the MSU community. Similarly, the spread of disinformation in the form of decontextualized videos and memes about Chinese and Asian people on social media have led members of our community to be labeled as carriers of the coronavirus. As members of the MSU community continue to ignore the line between valid concerns and misconceptions, members of Asian and APIDA communities continue to be discriminated against and isolated from their rightful academic and social communities for coughing, sneezing, and wearing surgical face masks, common behaviors during the cold and flu season. We want our MSU community to be in solidarity with and support students' rights to live, study, and engage at MSU without fear of discrimination and exclusion based on their appearance, place of origin, race, ethnicity, and or travel record. The exclusion of any Asian or Asian American students is unwarranted and deeply rooted in xenophobia, sinophobia, and Orientalist tropes. We condemn these actions and ideologies as they have no place in our diverse and inclusive community. Insensitive and offensive jokes and comments targeting students who appear to be of Asian descent are intolerable acts that undermine the severity of the situation, the victims and the affected individuals and their loved ones. We emphasize the importance of reporting any exclusionary acts to the MSU OIEE. As a university and campus community, we strive to counter these exclusionary acts and statements by fostering a supportive culture through inclusion, acceptance, and compassion. We should be sympathetic to those around us who show them love. Fear does not excuse discrimination or marginalization of any group. Given this urgency of the issue, we call on our communities, as well as anyone here in the Board of Trustees and anyone here in this room, to come to our town hall on Thursday, February 20th at 7:30 p.m. In the International Center at room 115. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Alexa Marsh, followed by Ethan Jadoen.
Good morning. Chairman, board members, and President Stanley, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm excited to be here today to tell you about an amazing opportunity I've experienced here at MSU that has transformed the way I look at higher education. My name is Alexa Marsh, and I am the president of a club on campus called the Sustainable Spartans. We work on sustainability-related projects on campus. For example, we've installed a solar-powered picnic table located near Case Hall, and we've installed energy-saving lights in the Business College complex. We have plenty of other projects that we manage. However, what I came to speak to you today is our largest project yet. This past summer, our club won a grant from the Ford Motor Company Fund. We were awarded this grant to put solar-powered lights on bus shelters around campus. The goal of this project is to increase safety on campus, show students the possibilities of renewable energy, and to encourage students to use more public transportation. We have partnered with CATA, IPF, and the MSU Office of Sustainability to make this dream come true. The first half of this grant process has consisted of outreach with partners, deciding which companies we'd like to buy the lights from, and sending out surveys to help decide where to install the lights. The first light is now up at McDonnell Hall. Now we are going into the final phase of the project, which is to install the panels, send out the post survey, and compile data for a final report. But what I really want to share with you today is how much I have learned as a student from this process. This project has taught me everything from project management and administration to budgeting and communication. First, I'd like to talk about grant management. I've learned that there will be bumps in the road that you have to navigate. Some strategies I have learned to overcome them include getting a head start and paying close attention to the project timeline. We've had a few bumps in our road, but by giving ourselves extra time and being flexible, we found our way around them. This project has also taught me a lot about how to communicate with stakeholders. Because many of our partners are donating their time to us, it's extremely important to consider how valuable their time is and make every minute in every meeting count. I've learned that straightforward communication is important, and no one can be left wondering what their job is at the end of a meeting. Finally, this process has taught me about accountability. As a student, if I fail a class or don't do my homework, that just affects me. While I care deeply about excelling for myself, this project holds me accountable to others as well. If I fail at a task, it affects our whole crew. This pressure can be a little intense, but it's extremely relevant to the real world, and it has given me a good idea of what it's like to manage a real team and ensure that I'm ready to tackle a career when I graduate. All in all, Ford Motor Company Fund has given me and my club so many learning opportunities that I know will carry on into our future careers. Thank you. I can't even begin to explain how much I appreciate our partners. Thank you, MSU Office of Sustainability, IPF, and CATA. We couldn't have done it without you. I truly hope by being here today, it inspires other students to leverage opportunities like this for their education and to seek these opportunities through MSU. Not everyone gets a chance at higher education, so make it count. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Ethan Jadoen.
Hello, Chairperson, Board of Trustees, and President Stanley. I stand before you today to tell you about the most transformative and inspiring initiative I've seen at this university. Given enough resources and guidance, I truly believe this group will drive the university's sustainability initiatives to levels not seen before. The Student Sustainability Leadership Council connects administration with passionate, engaged students working to deliver a more sustainable world. Prior to the formation of the Leadership Council, I spent my time as a coalition leader for green student organizations called the Green Alliance. While we fought to raise awareness about our activities and help support each other, I can tell you from experience just how difficult it is to coordinate with a dozen student organizations, an experience much like herding cats. Early on in my time at the role, we identified a student advisory board with administration as a key step towards raising the profile of sustainability and environmentalism at this university. I'm proud to say that thanks to the work of Amy Butler, that we have achieved that goal. Beginning last semester, student leaders now meet weekly with the Director of Sustainability to discuss what is happening in the sustainability realm and our role as students in advancing it. By empowering students like me to voice our concerns, engage in projects, and learn from the administration, you empower the student body to push for sustainable change. These student leaders represent the pulse of sustainable action at this university, and they are the next generation of leaders with their ears to the ground. Prior to its establishment, students came together for one large coordinated event amongst ourselves, coined the Big Green Gig. Now, because of the resources and structure afforded to us, students are expanding the scope of their activities using the SSLC. We're now looking at coordinating activities throughout April in celebration of Earth Month. The establishment of the SSLC provides students with perks like access to networks, conferences, and even the reinstatement of the Green Fund for student projects. I can't tell you how much this experience means to me and the student body. For years, I struggled to get Green student leaders in the same room. Our organizational capacity and network access limited our effectiveness, but now that the group is institutionalized and speaks directly with MSU administration, the excitement and energy in this area have all increased. The importance of this group is not lost on me as we near the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and I hope it's not lost on you either. The mere existence of such a council sends a powerful message about the priorities and values of the university, and it demonstrates a commitment to sustainability in an engaging, powerful way. The Leadership Council has given me hope that the problems of tomorrow might just be solvable with the actions of today. It is my greatest pride and honor to attend a university that cares so deeply about the input of its students and works to develop their ideas. My hope is that you will consider the importance of sustainability to the student body and continue to include our voices in decision making. With our powers combined, student leaders, faculty, and staff will make this university and the wider world go green. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes public participation.
Well, I want to begin by thanking our speakers from the audience today. I very much appreciate your comments. Last week, I thought it was important to send an email message to both Michigan State campus and alumni communities about the display at the Wharton Center gift shop. I spoke about the need for immediate action and response. I want you to know I'm monitoring progress at the Wharton very closely as management there institutes bias training and takes steps to ensure awareness and accountability. Staff training began this week, and again, we will be on top of this. To the African American community at Michigan State, and particularly the students for whom this incident has reinforced their anxiety, fear, or sense of isolation and marginalization, as I said in this letter, I hear you, as did every leader of this university. I'm also aware that intentions and words are not sufficient in dealing with this issue. So I want to mention again actions we're taking to bring this Spartan community to a point where we can all feel safe, respected, and welcome. This incident only underscored the need for urgency in addressing our diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and formulating a campus-wide plan to address the gaps we find. This is something all of us need to be a part of and something we all have ample opportunity to engage in. The university's Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Strategic Planning Effort, led by Migrant Student Services Director Luis Garcia and Honors College Dean Cynthia Jackson Elmore, is now underway. Their task is to inventory DEI efforts across campus, detect gaps, and identify opportunities as they draft a plan we hope will bring Michigan State into a position of national leadership in this area. They'll be reporting today to the Board of Trustees, who's very engaged in this effort, on what they're doing so far and their progress to date. A separate multicultural center feasibility planning committee, meanwhile, is currently seeking architectural and engineering proposals for that study. A facility of this kind has been called for by students for many years, and again, we've heard them. It began as a student-initiated project, and it will remain a student-focused project as we move it forward. I'm glad to be able to direct the university's attention and resources towards this, and I look forward to working with the board as we look at a planning committee that will do a recommendation scheduled for December on this project. And we're also starting a search for a new chief diversity officer. Paulette Granberry Russell, my senior advisor for diversity and director of the Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives, intends to transition from her position. After 22 years of Paulette's tireless service to advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion at MSU, we have a strong foundation, and it's essential now that we maintain that momentum and build more from it. I've appointed a committee chaired by the College of Arts and Letters Dean Chris Long and Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer Melissa Wu to conduct a national search supported by the executive search firm Isaacson Miller. The Chief Diversity Officer will be broadly responsible for fostering an inclusive, equitable, safe, and culturally responsive and supportive environment for Michigan State University. And I want to add that all of our leadership searches and planning initiatives are being conducted with the participation of student representatives on the committees, so student voices are heard from the outset. We're making these initiatives and searches as inclusive and transparent as possible, and you'll be able to follow their progress online. In my letter last week, I said that the responsibility of creating a truly inclusive campus shouldn't fall on one person, but should be a shared priority for all. All of us need to confront our personal attitudes that make it difficult for us and this university to move forward. I think it's clear that an important component of our efforts to address diversity, equity, and inclusion needs to be education, involving the entire campus. And so with our education and training programs targeting relationship violence and sexual misconduct, every member of the MSU community will participate in ongoing education or professional development on the essential matter of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that includes all faculty, staff, and students. This is another action that has been sought by student leaders and faculty leadership. I'm looking forward to working with both groups and others across the university because this will truly require a community effort. And I want to emphasize this is not just about the Wharton incident, but it's foundational to the integrity of everything that we do at MSU. We really need to raise the bar and approach this with an attitude of excellence and fulfill, if we're going to fulfill every aspect of our mission as a public land-grant university. I expect to be able to provide more details in the coming weeks and months. Anything this important and encompassing requires careful consideration, but also urgency. Many conversations and further planning will be necessary, but we will not be slowed down by the challenges we face. And it's my expectation that the program will be in place by the fall of 2020 for education. On a positive note, you may have seen that the College of Nursing and Dean Randy Rosh got a very well-deserved shout-out from the governor in her State of the State address a couple of weeks ago. Governor Whitmer had asked the college to help lead an initiative called Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies. This initiative will address racial health care disparities throughout the state, including featuring implicit bias training in the curriculum. That is a great example of how the knowledge we develop at Michigan State benefits not only our students, but the individuals and communities we serve across the state and around the world. I want to turn to some other items worth noting today. We heard some very important comments about sustainability on campus. I want to draw your attention to an item on today's agenda as a case in point. It's a plan to develop a new 20-megawatt solar energy farm on the south side of campus. This development will contribute substantially to MSU's sustainable energy portfolio, and at its peak capacity, it could supply up to a third of the campus's peak electrical demand. Of course, you know that Michigan State University already has North America's largest solar carport, which increases our on-site renewable energy generation already. If these two are working together on a sunny day, they could provide about half of MSU's energy consumption during those days. I want to turn to some other items worth noting today. I want to acknowledge the passing of two individuals who played important roles at Michigan State and in the lives of many Spartans. We learned that John DiBiagio, who was Michigan State University's 17th president from 1985 to 1992, died February 1st. A president at three major universities, he is remembered here as a passionate advocate for access to higher education, inclusion, and service. And former trustee, head football coach, and athletic director George Perlis passed away January 7th. He also was dedicated to service and to our university. I want to convey the university's condolences and gratitude to the families of Dr. DiBiagio and Coach Perlis, and I'm sure our trustees will have more to add this morning. I don't always have a chance to talk about the amazing accomplishments of our faculty. We learned this week of another very impressive ranking for our research programs. The Nature Index is a database of 82 of the world's top science journals. It now ranks MSU faculty fifth in the country in the increase in peer-reviewed natural sciences articles they published or co-authored over the last 3 years. This speaks very highly of the high-quality scholarship and productivity of MSU's researchers. I've also had the opportunity over the past few weeks to meet some of the amazing, engaged, and accomplished students at Michigan State University. I spoke to 1,200 top MSU applicants and their parents January 31st for the Alumni Distinguished Scholarship Competition. It was a great group of prospective students and confirmed for me that the caliber of students who are seeking to attend Michigan State University is truly very impressive. And not only are MSU students bright, but they're also engaged in the community and the world around them. It was a pleasure to help extend recognition to 124 Michigan State University undergraduate and graduate students for their volunteerism last month. Each volunteered 100 or more hours of community-engaged learning or service for over a year. Together, they totaled more than 23,000 hours of service with 300 community members, which represents more than $500,000 of benefits contributed to the community. It was truly inspirational and a reminder of what we do and why, as educators and Spartans, it matters so much. Finally, as you know, we had a very successful search for a new head coach for Michigan State University football. Once again, I want to extend a warm Spartan welcome, a welcome back to Coach Mel Tucker and his family. As I said before, I'm very excited by his energy and enthusiasm and his dynamic and motivational approach to working with our student athletes and how much he cares about those students as students. They are students first, of course, and I appreciate that our athletics department never loses track of that. I also want to acknowledge Coach Mark D'Antonio and thank him for his very successful 13 years at Michigan State University, including taking this football program to the highest level in Division I. Coach D'Antonio has set a high bar for the program, but I'm very confident that Mel Tucker will be able to meet that. And with that, I conclude my report to the board. Next, we'll have our gift, grant, and contract report from Senior Vice President for Research and Innovation, Steve Hsu.
Good morning. Chairperson Byram, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is November 13, 2019 through January 22, 2020. The total value for this period is $95,228,992.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report? Thank you. Seconded?
Support.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The contract report is approved. Now we will have our research presentation. Dr. Hsu.
Professor Paneth, will you please join me? It's my pleasure to introduce Nigel Paneth, MD, MPH. He is a pediatrician and epidemiologist. He joined Michigan State in 1989 and founded what is now the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics in the College of Human Medicine. A Harvard-educated physician, he completed his postgraduate training in pediatrics at the Bronx Municipal Hospital, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and later attended Columbia to earn his master's degree in public health. Over his career, Dr. Paneth has held uninterrupted National Institutes of Health funding and has been a leader of three of the largest NIH-supported longitudinal studies investigating the determinants of intellectual and neurodevelopmental disabilities in premature infants. He is currently the lead principal investigator of the Michigan Center of the NIH Environmental Influences on Child Health Outcomes, or ECHO, study. He has authored or edited four books and published almost 300 peer-reviewed papers. He currently serves on a number of state, national, and international boards or committees, including serving as co-chair of the Michigan PFAS and Health Research Consortium. By researching the origins of brain damage and developmental disabilities, focusing especially on pregnancy and the period surrounding birth, Nigel works to develop approaches to prevent these disorders. In 2014, Nigel joined Michael Leahy as co-director of MSU's Center for Research in Autism, Intellectual, and Other Neurodevelopmental Disabilities, or, as our tradition here, we have to make an acronym out of everything, C-RAIN-D, which he will tell us more about today. Please welcome University Distinguished Professor Dr. Nigel Paneth.
Well, thank you, Steve, for that very generous introduction. Almost not prepared for that. And President Stanley and Provost Sullivan, honorable trustees, I'm really happy that you invited us to tell you a little bit about our program in the Center for Research in Autism, Intellectual, and Other Neurodevelopmental Disabilities, which began on campus in 2013 under the leadership of Mike Leahy, who is a bit hoarse today, so I'm the designated hitter for telling you all about C-RAIN. And then I joined in 2014 to give another perspective, a more prevention-oriented perspective to our program. So before I tell you about what we do in C-RAIN, I'd like to set out the landscape of neurodevelopmental disabilities, the things we are dealing with. And I'll start with the totals column. 1 in 5 to 1 in 6 children and perhaps also adults suffer from a developmental disability. This is not a rare phenomenon. The more severe and uncommon ones include cerebral palsy, which occurs in 1 in 300 children. Epilepsy, you may be surprised to hear, has a cumulative prevalence of 1% in the population by age 20. Severe intellectual disability, 1 in 300 children also. mild intellectual disabilities, by which we mean children with IQ scores between 50 and 70, are found in about 1 to 1.5% of the child population now, and autism spectrum disorder is now diagnosed between 1 and 1.5% of U.S. children. Then we turn to the even commoner disabilities. Learning disabilities are found in about 1 in 10 school children, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in at least 5%. So the total, allowing for overlap among disabilities, is between 1 in 5 and 1 in 6 citizens affected. So this is not a small problem, and I'm sure all of you have encountered in your families and among your associates people with these difficulties and families with these difficulties. Now, what do we do? We work on prevention, especially looking at environmental influences, phenomena, infections, other things that contribute to developmental disabilities. We work on the diagnosis and assessment of developmental disabilities with a particular focus on making early diagnosis so that interventions can be applied more effectively. We are very involved in lifespan transitions. We don't think of these developmental disabilities solely affecting small children. We recognize four transitions, conception to toddlerhood, toddlerhood to the school. That's a very big transition for so many parents, from school to the workplace, and then the problem, which is accelerated in many types of developmental disabilities, of aging. And when I speak about transition to the workforce, I should note that the rehabilitation counseling program that Mike Leahy has directed now for many years has been rated the number one program in that field in the United States over the past 20 years. Tremendous accomplishments. Then we turn to interventions. We want to make life better for people with developmental disabilities, and we have many programs that I'll tell you about that involve interventions. And then implementation. We have a successful intervention, but we're academics. We sit here in the university just because we've published our trial. Work doesn't end there. We've got to make sure it gets used, it gets implemented in communities that need it. Our vision is to make MSU a global leader in research, in training, and in service in the neurodevelopmental disabilities. And we have a value statement that support our vision and shape our culture, respecting human dignity. That's particularly important in people with developmental disabilities, engaging with the community, and we have a community advisory group that we work with, including diverse populations, making sure that we have a solid scholarly environment to study the developmental disabilities, and always using the best available evidence before we move into practice. Now, we're a virtual center. We have no specific location. We're all around campus. We have 93 faculty on our website from 12 colleges who actively contribute to this effort from all across, and then in addition, extension, outreach, and engagement. Among our achievements in the last few years, in research, we have a program that seed funds grants to assist investigators to get larger external funding. And only two examples of this are the ECHO program that was referenced by Steve, a 7-year, $17 million NIH program that focuses on the environmental causes of childhood disorders, and in our case, especially focusing on neurodevelopmental disorders. Connie Sung in the School of Education has a Department of Defense grant on autism, working on school-to-work issues. That's over $1 million. But those are only two examples of the grants we've been able to acquire by dint of bringing together investigators from so many different disciplines. We have several training programs. The Hegarty Fellows Training Program is a postdoctoral program in which the postdoctoral fellows spend 1 year here at MSU and 1 year in Ireland with our collaborators in Irish universities. And more recently, we were successful in obtaining an assisted fellowship that's funded by the European Union. Those grants, about 2% of the applications get funded. This is to provide training in technology for disabilities, new technology that might assist people in communication, other aspects of disability. And MSU has established, with the support of our program, a master's degree in applied behavioral analysis, which is the preferred technique for helping children and adults with autism. We now have substantially contributed to the workforce of people who are qualified ABA therapists and trainers in the state of Michigan. We have Spartan Project Search. It supports the employment of young adults with neurodevelopmental disabilities, and I'm happy to say that our employment rate for people who have gone through this program is much, much higher than the employment rate for disabled children in general in Michigan. We have our Celebrating the Spectrum Festival with the College of Music. I'm happy that Deborah Moriarty is here. She plays a huge role in this. It showcases the musical talent of pre-college students with on the spectrum. I can't tell you how moving it is to see this program in action. I invite all of you to join our to come and visit our summer program when it takes place. We are collaborating with Hope Network for in developing a new assessment programs for autism spectrum disorder, and we will be opening new space jointly with them on Hagedorn Road right off campus on April the 27th between 3 and 5 p.m. You're all invited to that as well. A new initiative, we just on January 15th submitted jointly with Wayne State University an application to get an NIH-supported intellectual and developmental disabilities research center in Michigan. This is one of the oldest, it perhaps is the very oldest research center program at NIH. It was funded by the Kennedy family in the early 1960s, who've always had a special interest in developmental disabilities. There are 14 centers nationally. Michigan has never had one. This would be the first one in Michigan. Awards will be announced in May. We keep our fingers crossed. If we got this, we'd get 5 years of support to the two universities, totaling $6.5 million. Two-thirds of the budget is ours. Our lead study in this center is a study of whether computer games, which actually are being pioneered as tools for intellectual development in childhood in Africa, can improve cognitive outcomes in lead-exposed children in Flint, Michigan. And the study is led by Mike Boivin of the College of Osteopathic Medicine, and I'm someone I'm sure you'll know about, our wonderful Monahan Atisha, who's my colleague in the Department of Pediatrics and Human Development located in Flint in our College of Human Medicine. We will also provide resources for not just studying, but for implementing evidence-based interventions for disabilities in the community. And we'll provide two special resources for investigators if we're funded. One is a core that supports the assessment of environmental contaminants and their role in intellectual and developmental disabilities. And the other is a subset of that core deals with the microbiome, an increasingly attended to factor in developmental disabilities. And also, we will provide support to all investigators in this topic in every aspect of assembling studies of IDD, from recruiting participants to doing assessments to completing the statistical analyses. So our ultimate goal, as I said before, make MSU a global leader and a major resource for cutting-edge research and programs and treatments for assessing the problems of children with any of the intellectual and developmental disabilities, autism spectrum disorders, other forms of intellectual disability, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, learning disabilities, and the other neurodevelopmental disabilities such as cerebral palsy and epilepsy. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope I can answer questions, or some of my colleagues can answer questions if you have them. Thanks very much.
Questions? So I'll just make a comment. I think, thank you, first of all, for that presentation. And the work is extraordinary. And I think this is, you know, we had Founders Day on the 12th, obviously, 165th anniversary of Michigan State University. And I think if the founders considered what their concept was, and particularly as we think about Michigan State University in the context of the land-grant university, which right. takes the knowledge we generate here and applies it out, I think the kind of multidisciplinary approach you're taking, which takes full advantage of all the different departments we have at the university, your outreach into the community, and yet the high quality of science you're putting forward as well, epitomizes, I think, what we would like to see from MSU. So thank you for that presentation, which I found inspiring, and I look forward and wish you luck on the grant, and look forward to continue to have this conversation about the impact.
And around. If I can make a little in joke, that's why I'm not at Harvard. But I'm here at MSU. This is where we do that kind of work.
Yeah, I left Harvard too. So yeah, that's right. Thank you. Other comments or questions?
I just want to say thank you for the presentation. I ran into Ian Gray at Christmas time and buying Spartan gear for grandchildren, and we got to talking about the autism program and how great it would be to have you come forward and present at one of our board meetings. So thank you very much. I'm very grateful that did occur, and you're doing great work. And for parents that are dealing with children with disabilities, you are making a difference in their lives. So this, I couldn't agree more with Dr. President Stanley's comments, but thank you for your presentation. It's very inspiring.
Thank you. Good. Thank you. All right, we're now going to move to personnel action and information reports. Provost Sullivan.
Trustees, I present for your approval the items in the February 2020 list of personnel actions. This includes the appointment of two new tenured faculty members and the appointment of Brian Quinn as Vice President and General Counsel after serving in an acting capacity for the past year. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved. Support.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The personnel actions are approved.
You made it. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. So no other business from you, Provost. So then, if not, then we're going to move on to our committee reports. We will begin with the Committee on Budget and Finance, Trustee Melanie Foster.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Budget and Finance Committee, I move that the board hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Michelle M. Flunk, Department of Microbiology and Molecular Genetics Enhancement Endowment.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Budget and Finance Committee, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to sell the real property located at 111 Main Street, Leland, Michigan, to Leelanau Community Cultural Center for $800,000 and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or his designee.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Support.
Thank
Chuck
you.
Chuck Reed's prepared to make a few comments on this.
Thank you. This is the old art building in Leland, Michigan. The university has owned this property for just over 80 years. For the last 30 years, we've leased it to the local community, and they proceeded to develop a very vibrant cultural and art center. They recently approached us and wanted to purchase the building so they could continue their work.
Thank you. Any other discussion? No? If not, we'll bring it to vote. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Again, the resolution is passed.
As chairperson of the Budget and Finance Committee, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to negotiate and execute a power purchase agreement and associated agreements, including leases, for the purpose of constructing a solar array in the agricultural district and infrastructure improvements necessary to connect that array to the T.B. Simon power plant for a term that may exceed 10 years and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or his designee.
Do I have a second?
Support.
Thank you.
And as President Stanley discussed, this is another step toward making MSU a greener and more sustainable campus. And Dan Bowman's prepared to make a few comments.
Good morning. I believe President Stanley hit the main highlights of the array. The only thing I would mention is once we have this array in place with the 30 megawatts, we project we'll save at least $1 million a year in avoided energy costs.
Talk about the size of it.
Sure. The size is 20 megawatts. It'll be on about 100 acres on the south portion of campus adjacent to Hagedorn and Jolly Roads.
Good. Any other discussion? No? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Again, the resolution carries.
As chairperson of the Budget and Finance Committee, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled College of Engineering Student Activities Building and implement the project as a material change to the landscape pursuant to Board Policy 020601, and be it further resolved that the board grant a variance to the university zoning ordinance for this project to permit an academic land use within the service district.
We have a resolution. Do I have a second?
Support.
Thank you.
And Barb Krantz is prepared to comment.
Thank you. This facility is a replacement shop facility for the College of Engineering co-curricular activities. We have many students in engineering that participate in formula race car development and building Baja cars and solar cars as examples. Their current facility is on Jolly Road, and with the movement here in the larger shop facility, we'll be able to accommodate more students, and it will be on a bus route, so that will help with freshman students in particular to be able to participate. The project is fundraised by the College of Engineering, and they're prepared to proceed at this time.
Right, and they are raising all the funds privately.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Budget and Finance Committee, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to increase the budget for the project entitled Munn Ice Arena Expansion from $18,800,000 to $23,235,000.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Support.
Thank you.
And Dan Bowman's prepared to discuss this.
Sure. You may recall last spring we had a very aggressive bid climate, a lot of construction activity going on, and this is essentially realigning the budget with the bids that came in after board approval. So we had a low estimate from our construction manager. Once we got our actual bid pricing in, we're now realigning our budget to match the bids. Athletics is still committed to either fundraising all of the money for this project or paying for it out of reserves.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Now we have a report from the Committee on Academic Affairs by Trustee Byron.
Thank you. As chairperson of Academic Affairs Committee, I move that the board hereby approves the revisions to policy 04-17-07, Emeriti title, shown in attachment A, and Provost Sullivan is prepared to give any comments.
Do I have a second to that motion?
Second.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The current policy for emeritus title requires that a faculty member have been here for 15 years, but the entire law faculty became MSU faculty January 1st. Which means that none of them would be eligible to be emeritus until 2035, regardless of how long they'd already served. So this is a footnote that applies to the School of Law. It's been through the formal academic governance procedures and is now recommended for your vote.
Any further discussion on this? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Academic Affairs Committee, I move that the board hereby approves the recommendation of the University Committee on Faculty Tenure Hearing Committee to dismiss Professor Selman Akbulut for cause pursuant to board policy 03-17-09, effective immediately.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Provost Sullivan?
This is a case that began in academic year 14-15. The professor in question refused to teach an assigned undergraduate class. He was accordingly disciplined with a letter of reprimand and withholding of 10% of his salary. He requested an administrative review of the discipline and filed a grievance with the faculty grievance office. Subsequently, the administrative review upheld the discipline and the grievance was dismissed. The professor then began to undertake a campaign directed against the individuals who were involved in the review. And in the report you received, there's a documentation of these emails. In November of 2017, he was notified that he should not continue the emails and that he should remove them from the university's computer materials. He refused to do so. And accordingly, in January of 2018, he received a notice of intent to impose a written reprimand. That reprimand was issued on January 22nd. There was, again, a period of review of this. An ad hoc committee comprised of full professors in the College of Natural Science, but excluding the mathematics department, reviewed his actions, and that committee unanimously concluded that serious discipline against him was warranted. Subsequently, there was a removal for cause proceeding initiated. That was eventually heard by a hearing committee, which held hearings in August of 2019. Briefs from those parties were received on September 25th of 2019. The hearing committee reached a decision on October 7th, and the hearing committee held that the charging party had proved by clear and convincing evidence that the professor had systematically violated the university's policies, particularly relating to collegiality, and there is sufficient cause to revoke his tenure. Written comments on that response were received there in your package. There's also discussion of the applicable university policies. I would say that, we take tenure very seriously. It is an important guarantee of a faculty member's academic freedom. But it's not an absolute right. It does entail responsibilities. Among those are teaching your assigned classes and also treating your colleagues as colleagues. And in this particular case, the continued emails directed at and advertised widely attacking people involved in the academic review really undercuts our commitment to shared governance, because it's more likely to intimidate other faculty members from continuing to participate in these reviews.
Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Next, we'll have a report from the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance. Trustee Kelly.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee, I move the board appoint Plante Moran as the university's external auditors for the year 2019-2020 at a fee of $330,000.
Second for this? Thank you.
Mark Haas is available if there's any questions.
Every year, the university has their financial reports audited by external auditors. Board of Trustees policy requires a competitive bidding of those contracts every 6 years. The competitive bid process started in the fall. We solicited bids from 14 accounting firms. We interviewed the three finalists in December with the members of the Trustee Audit Committee, and there was unanimous agreement there that we should choose Plante Moran moving forward.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee, I move the board approve the following: a service agreement with Corporation of Digital Scholarship, a service agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, an option agreement with Nimble Acoustics, a license agreement with PaveSoft LLC, a research agreement with Scion Plasma. All of the agreements and contracts are consistent with earlier public notice given by at prior board meetings. The related term sheets are presented to the board for inclusion in the minutes. And hey, Teresa Sullivan is available for any questions.
Anybody, member of the board, have any questions? Any further discussion? No. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee, I announce the university's intent to negotiate the following contracts with Dr. Gowei Wei and Maytree Inc., with Dr. Patrick Khan Wan and Dr. Hassan Chung, and 3D Founder Inc., and Dr. Joshua Pavnik and Early Learning Institute. There's no need for a motion on this. In addition, the committee also reviewed conflict of interest reporting with Associate Vice President of Audit, Risk, and Compliance, Marilyn Tarrant. That's the end of my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from the Committee on Student Life and Culture. Trustee Scott.
Thank you, President Stanley. The Committee on Student Life and Culture discussed campus climate concerns and received updates on community relations and the election-related activities from Executive Vice President Kathy Wilbur. This concludes my report.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear the chairperson's report.
Thank you. President Stanley mentioned in his president's comments about the passing of some former Spartans. I want to acknowledge the George Perlis family. I had the privilege to attend his celebration of life, rightfully and held at Spartan Stadium. But I want to send my condolences to his wife, Sally, and his children. George was not only a trustee, but he's athletic director, coach, and I believe a former player at Michigan State. We also lost former President John DiBiagio, and I know Melanie is going to give comments on Dr. Biagio, so I will only acknowledge his passing. I'm very excited to report that the Board of Trustees has an updated website, and the intent of this website is to be more transparent in our business and to share information in a timely manner. Please check it out at trustees.msu.edu. Also, I want to acknowledge the hard work of both Nakia Barr and Jackie Vandenbosch, and also Sandra Cameron from University Communications, who worked diligently on making sure that this website came to fruition. I want to congratulate Brian Quinn as our general counsel. He has stepped up in the interim role during this past year, and I want to know I personally appreciate all the work that you have been doing on behalf of the university, and I'm very glad that President Stanley recommended you to be our general counsel. I also want to draw your attention to the board recently announced that we're going to have an investiture of President Stanley this spring. It's going to be at the Wharton Center. It's set for 3 p.m. April 23rd. This will be an inclusive campus-wide event and a joyful milestone in the life of our Spartan community. So there will be a public reception following that, and I encourage all of you to please participate and attend this joyful event. As I close, I want to wish Coach D'Antonio and his wife, Becky, the very best as Coach eases into retirement. He's not going to be coaching the football team going forward. He is going to be assisting with A.D. Beekman for the next year. So as he eases into retirement and retires from being coach, I want to wish him and Becky the best. That will conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Kelly.
Well, I would echo all of those thoughts. I would also like to welcome our new head football coach. Had a chance to meet him, and he seems like he's on the right track, and I wish him all the best. And then just on a personal note, George Perlis, I knew him from afar. When I came on this board, I got to know him, and he was very welcoming to myself and my family, and so he'll be missed. Thank you.
Trustee Ferguson.
I had the pleasure of being on the board with President DiBiagio, and he certainly was into the students, and he had a great foundation for moving forward, and he'll certainly be greatly missed. I also had the pleasure of having many years with George Perlis, and George Perlis was the most loyal person that anyone could ever meet. You know, I mean, and it really showed up at a service we had here. There were just so many people here, and all they had were great stories about George Perlis, who had so much to give and was so superly loyal to everyone, and very loyal to Michigan State, and felt Michigan State, he acted out that how the university is so special. And both of those gentlemen we're going to very much miss, but they really are a foundation for our future, because our best years are to come, because the strong leadership we have today and with the great foundation that individuals before President Stanley and others, that our best years are really in front of us. And I want to say that our, regardless of what the newspapers try to say, our search for a new president was very well done. And I like always say that I really admire Chairman Beekman, Athletic Director Beekman. His strength, besides being intelligent, tremendously intelligent, he also knew what he didn't know. And he's had good people around him to make everything really work for us on the football search, too. And I just want to say we picked the right person, and our best years are ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Foster?
I, too, had the...
pleasure of serving on the Board of Trustees with President DiBiagio, and I'd like to note that so did Vice President Kathy Wilbur. And John was driven by the highest standards of professionalism in higher education. He was a tireless worker committed to enforcing ethics and gender equity in college athletics, and he had a charismatic personality that, I mean, it's right there in that smile that really lit up a room when he came in. I'd like to note a couple of his accomplishments here at Michigan State, in that 1987 he initiated the university's first major capital campaign, raising more than $217 million to offset forthcoming shortfalls in state funding. He also secured the naming gift from Eli Broad for the College of Business, along with a multi-million dollar gift for Materials Research Institute from the Herbert and Grace Dow Foundation. In 1989, he led the inauguration of the campus K1200 superconducting cyclotron, the world's highest energy continuous beam accelerator, which was a precursor to EFRIB on our campus. He was an advocate for public higher education and spoke very eloquently and very often on the land grant importance of our public universities. I'd like to add, besides serving here at Michigan State University, he was also the president of Tufts University and the University of Connecticut. So there will be a memorial service later this year on campus. Thank you. Oh, and I'd also like to note the passing of George Perlis's. As said by my colleagues, there isn't anyone in this room that didn't love Michigan State more than George Perlis. And he was a real character, and I enjoyed my time knowing him on the board and as a friend.
Trustee Masalim?
I, too, want to give my condolences to the DiBiagio family, as Melanie eloquently stated. I also want to welcome and congratulate Coach Tucker for taking the job. We are extremely excited to have Coach here. I wish Coach D'Antonio and Becky their best in retirement, and thank you for all your years of service. I also want to congratulate Brian Quinn on his new appointment. We're very excited to work with you. I think, Diane had mentioned the updated website, you know, from the Board of Trustees' point of view, and our effort to be more transparent. And I also want to thank Anna Pegler-Gordon yesterday, who, during our student faculty liaison lunch, complimented our updated website and our goal of more transparency. And, Coach Perlis's passing to me was very personal. I played for George. George brought me here. You know, and my best years with George were not while I played, when I played for him. Matter of fact, I didn't like him when I played for him, to be very honest with you. And my best years with him were not while he was on the board. My best years were the years in which he was at the Motor City Bowl. And my late mother would always cook for him. And we had an annual tradition. I would go down there. It was probably 12 years in a row. I'd spend Christmas Eve with him, my friends and I and Coach. And we'd eat with his family, and he'd tell us stories. Those were my greatest years with him. And, you know, he brought me to Michigan State. And I'll never forget him for it. It was a very, very difficult passing for me. It was very close to him. Brought back a lot of memories. And I want to thank Andrea Mumford and Dr. Campbell. Renee Kanaki and I, Trustee Kanaki, did RVSM training a few weeks back, trauma-informed training, and it was very, very helpful, very insightful for us to understand, you know, what happens and what gets triggered during those events. And coming from, especially from me being, you know, the size that I am, I'm not threatened by other people, but just understanding, it was very, very helpful. So I really want to thank Dr. Campbell and Andrea Mumford for that and spending time with us. And that'll conclude my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Scott?
Thank you. I would like to first just say that I am extremely excited, this being Black History Month, to know that we have a president who is not just showing leadership but a sincere commitment to the DEI efforts on this campus. And I think it speaks volumes that under his leadership, we will have our first ever strategic plan specifically for DEI that will be campus-wide.
what that means to those of us that are people of color, that come from marginalized communities, is anything beyond words that I could express. So I do want to thank him for that and for all of those that are working on that committee with those efforts. I would also like to extend my condolences to the families of our former President DiBiagio, as well as Coach Perlis, who I got to know as a student here at MSU. And I do have some really crazy stories, but I won't share those now. I did enjoy getting to know him. He always had such a great and gregarious personality, and I do hope that their families are doing well. I also want to thank Paulette Granberry Russell. I know she will be leaving us, at least in this capacity. And I want to thank her for her years of service on this community and everything that she has done to help many of those that come through this university that are people of color, that come from other marginalized communities, as well as those that are of different ethnicities, those with disabilities, and et cetera. She has just been a person that has really spearheaded a lot of efforts, and with her leadership, other universities have also benefited from her expertise. So I want to thank you and wish you well as you go forward in your new path in life. I also want to congratulate G.C. Quinn. He has been fabulous, and I am very ecstatic about your promotion and knowing that we've got you going forward to keep us on the straight and narrow, and I am looking forward to continuing to work with you as well. I also wanted to just extend our congratulations on the retirement for Coach D'Antonio. We do thank him for everything that he's done, all the excitement that we have all been able to enjoy under his leadership as the coach for Michigan State's football team, and also to welcome to the Michigan State family, the Tucker family. I'm looking forward to continuing to get to know them and seeing what great things he brings to the football program. That would conclude my responses.
Trustee Teben.
I just want to address the students that came and spoke today. Sheiksha, I want to express my condolences for your experience at the OISS office, and we'll definitely be looking into that because no student should be treated that way when they're here asking for help, and you should have all the resources you need, and you are welcome here on campus, and we appreciate you being here today for letting us know about your experience so that we can do something about it. And Jonathan, I just want you to know that no student on this campus should ever feel like they don't belong here and they should never be treated that way. And I want all of our Asian students to know that we support you and we're here for you. And please keep me informed if there's any issues that you hear about on campus. I think it's important for us to know when these things happen so that we can do something about it. But I appreciate you coming to speak about that today. And Alexa and Ethan, I'm really excited to hear about the work that you guys are doing and your leadership here on campus. And I see you wrote letters to us, and now I have your contact information, and I'd love to be engaged and keep hearing about the work that you guys are doing here on campus. And thank you for coming today to tell us about it.
That's it. Good.
Move to adjourn.
Yep. So could I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Meeting is adjourned.